we have done a lot of things in several fields, in nutrition, in management, et cetera, et cetera, in order to learn how to win without these antibiotics and zinc oxide.
It's time for a new era of communication in the swine industry, one that you can get the latest updates while commuting or driving to farms. Here, you will have the brightest minds of the global swine industry in your pocket.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Meta Farms, transforming agricultural with data-driven solutions for pork producers. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. DSM Firmenich, you can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins.
Hello, and welcome to the Swine It Podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host, and I have as my guest Dr. Pedro Medal. Dr. Medal is the director of Innovabiotics, where he leads a team of scientists and researchers with a focus on developing new additives for the improvement of gut health in pigs as well as other species. Welcome to our show, Dr. Medal.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very proud and very happy and excited to participate in the podcast.
Great. Well, would you like to introduce yourself to our guests? Just share a brief background of your career path.
Sure. Well, my name is Pedro Medel. I'm agricultural engineer, and I did my PhD in animal nutrition, in particular in swine and in piglets. I finished the PhD in 2000. And when I finished, I started a company with some colleagues called Imagine Agroalimentaria. And this company has two main focus. One was to develop a research project with companies, mainly focused in animal health, in animal nutrition, in animal production. And the other focus of the company was running experimental trials. We had experimental facilities in broilers, in lion hens, in rabbits, in pigs. We accumulate a large experience developing different group of additives because most of the trials were done to test several families of additives in order to have the performance data to be approved in the European process to approve the different additives. In parallel, I was a professor in the University Alfonso X El Sabio. I teach animal nutrition between 2004 and 2011. And this work was done in parallel that in my work in IMASDE. And during my PhD, I did several stages in several universities in the States and in Canada, in Maryland, in Iowa, Saskatchewan, and in Quebec, and also in the Aarhus University in Denmark. In 2017, I joined Innovabiotics because the context was a big change in the way of doing the feeds and everything about the antibiotics, and I need a change. And then I moved to Innovabiotics, and I have been the director in Innovabiotics in the last 7 years. And this is a summary of my background.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that.
Eastman serves veterinarians and nutritionists in agrochemical and animal health industries by helping them select, evaluate, and implement innovative nutritional programs. Eastman works with your team to customize your gut health approach in feed and water. Eastman's approach addresses nutritional and bacterial challenges and finds new ingredient preservation and hygiene solutions. Explore ways to accelerate and innovate your programs. Contact the animal nutrition team at eastman.com.
So today we're going to discuss Dr. Medel's experiences with nutritional changes in pig diets in the European Union, particularly after the antibiotic restrictions and the zinc ban. So Dr. Medel, can you go back in time just a bit and briefly describe the ban, kind of the pathway to that and restrictions in Europe for me and the guests, and then we can dig into some of the details.
Okay. Well, the use of antibiotics something like 7-8 years ago in the European Union was very variable between countries, with the northern countries using less antibiotics and the southern countries using more antibiotics. But, all the policies about feed safety and food safety are common in the European Union. With the problem of resistances to the antibiotics, there was a clear policy to decrease the use of antibiotics. There was a big pressure from the authorities, and there are several plans at the European level, to the country levels, in order to decrease the use of antibiotics. A huge effort has been done in the last 7 years, and basically we decreased the use of antibiotics around 50%, approximately. Either in the as average in the European Union, but this decrease has been more intense in the countries in which the use was higher, like, for example, Spain. No? The use of this level of antibiotics was mainly because Spain has a system of production similar to the US with a lot of integrations. And this system is a little bit different from the other European countries. But basically, we have to stop the practice of using the antibiotics in order to avoid the illness of the animals, no? So, because in somehow, sometimes they were used like in a preventive way. Also, in 2017, the European Union decided to ban the pharmacological doses of zinc oxide, and the ban was in practice the last year. So we have to make both things at the same time, decrease the use of antibiotics and learning to make the diets without zinc oxide. And this create a lot of problems because the combination of both components make the diets typically very, let's say, very safe and very stable in the farms, and with less antibiotics and without pharmacological levels of zinc oxide, is a little bit more complicated to this kind of trials, especially after winning. No? And this is more or less the context in which we have been moving the last 7 years. We have done a lot of things in several fields, in nutrition, in management, et cetera, in order to learn how to win without these antibiotics and zinc oxide.
Right. And we'll touch on some of those different areas here. As far as nutrition goes, what were the biggest things you saw changed in diets as, particularly maybe we can start with that, that critical nursery period. What are the nutritional changes that have come across as you've gone down that 7 to 8 year path?
It's a good question.
And we're still learning, right? Probably still learning.
Yeah. No, and it's especially it's a long question to answer, no? First of all, I think the first change was related with the number of diets, because typically there were two diets, and this depends also in the country, because in Spain, for example, the weaning period is between 5 and 20 kilograms, but in the northern countries is more between 5 and 30. So the number of diets were different, but let's say that between 5 and 20 kilograms, we used to have two diets plus the crib feed. Now we increase the number of diets to 3 plus the crib feed. So the crib feed is under the sow on the first days after weaning, and then 3 more diets. So the starter diet has been split in 2, starter 1 and starter 2, in order to adapt better the diets to the piglet physiology, because we have to adapt much more now without the tool of the either of the antibiotics or the zinc oxide. No? The second philosophy change has been the objective of each diet, because in the past all the diets were designed in order to have as much as productivity as we can with the animals. However, nowadays, without these tools, is not possible, and the reaction of the sector, mainly in the grip diet, in the pre-starter diet, was to quarantine the gut health and to decrease the problems and the diarrhea problems and the mortality. Therefore, the objective of the grip diet is not the productivity. The main topic of this diet is to increase the feed intake. So when we design this diet, the only point that we have to focus is to increase the palatability and the feed intake in this period. And in the pre-starter diet, the productivity is important, but it's not the key factor. The key factor is the gut health, and is to maintain a smooth weaning just after weaning, and the first week after weaning is very important to avoid to have this typical post-weaning diarrhea and mortality. And so this diet, we are not trying to reach the maximum growth, but as less problems as we can, no? With the design of the diets.
How many days or pounds is that first starter diet then, typically?
Typically, the crypt feed is given between 3 and 7 days after weaning. So 7 days or 14 days before weaning, and between 3 and 7 days after weaning. Then the pre-starter diet between 1 and 2 weeks till 9 kilograms, because it depends very much on what is the weaning age and weaning weight. The pre-starter one is between 9 kilograms and 14 kilograms, and starter two diets between 14 kilograms to 20 kilograms. This is something more or less to give an idea of what we are talking about. So the starter two diet between 14 and 20 kilograms, in this case, clearly the most important thing is the performance. Not only the performance, but trying to recover part of the growth that we lost in the pre-starter diet. And in the starter one diet is something in between the pre-starter and starter two, in order to give more importance to performance, but still the gut health is the key point in this diet of starter one. So till the piglet has around 11, 12 kilograms, the diets, the component of gut health importance in the diet is very important. It's the key factor. So this is the most two changes that philosophical changes that has been done. If we go a little bit deeper into the feeds, well, the first nutrient that has changed a little bit is the water, the water supply, because drinking water is more and more important, and all the companies in the whole Europe has improved very, very much the drinking water system in the farms, with sanitation programs, the source of the water, the temperature, etc., etc. And not only that, this happened, but also the water nowadays becomes like a path to give some nutrients or to implement some additives. And this has been developed in the last 4 or 5 years mainly. Also in the past was done, but especially in the last 5 years.
So I'm going to ask a question about that really quick. Yeah, so sure. In terms of water, you know, using a water medication system or a system to provide some of the different nutritional aspects versus in the feed, right? And that's what you're talking about there.
Yeah. Yeah. So the water was used, the drinking water was used especially for putting some antibiotics, but nowadays there are a wide range of different antibiotics, from probiotics or acids or plants or herbs, et cetera, there are a wide range of ingredients that can be applied through the water. This is quite interesting because it's a very, it's much faster than using the feed like path to reach the animals. This is in one hand. And in the other hand, through the water, you are able to reach all the animals, because typically when you are putting an additive in the feed, when the animals start to feel sick, they stop to eat. So it doesn't matter what you are introducing in the feed, the feed never reach the animal. However, if the animal, even if he's sick, still is drinking. So the drinking water is an additional or an alternative way to reach this kind of animals that indeed they are the reservoir of the pathogens, and they are the source of the pathogens for the healthy animals. So I think this procedure will increase in the future. More and more of it will be applied through the drinking water.
I think that's the case in the U.S. as well. You know, I think there's just starting to be a focus, on water quality, and we're, you know, learning more. And clearly, you know, water is so highly variable from farm to farm. So that's a big task.
Yeah.
So you guys I can understand the complexity of what you in Europe have gone through.
Yeah. So if I have to give a recommendation, somewhere in or someone in the States to start to decrease the use of antibiotics, probably one of the first things that you have to do is to improve the water drinking systems. Well, but this is the first routine, let's say. But if we go to the design of the feeds, if we start with the energy, according with the things that I have, we saw previously, obviously the energy levels of the diets decrease, not very much, but a typical diet 7 years ago were around 250 kilocalories of net energy, and now is much more typical 2,400 or 2,450. So some 5-10% of decrease on energy has been applied in order to make the diets more smooth, more in order to decrease the growth and to give more time the animal to adapt to the diet and to adapt to the new system, because the diet is completely different to the milk, etc. So this is the first change, but probably the biggest change that we have done is decreasing the level of protein in the diets. So we use something like between 19 and 21%, 7-10 years ago, in the different phases from 21 till 19. And now is also very variable between the different countries, but typical levels are between 16.5 and 17.5, maximum 18. And this is a huge change, because obviously when you are decreasing the level of protein, you have the advantage that you decrease the diarrhea incidence, but also you decrease the performance. This is clear. However, you can avoid this increasing the level of synthetic amino acids, but then there is some problems that you have to deal with. Because when in Europe the diets start to decrease the protein, in general the companies try to maintain the level of lysine, and this is a mistake. Because when you are decreasing the level of protein, you are decreasing the level of essential amino acids that you don't have the synthetic version, let's say. So you can maintain the level of lysine, methionine, threonine, and tryptophan, and even valine. But then when you are talking about leucine and isoleucine or histidine or arginine, you don't have these synthetic amino acids, and you cover the ideal protein for the first five, but not for the less. Therefore, you have this the proteins can be constructed because the essential amino acids are not. And even if you have the much more quantities of lysine, methionine, threonine, etc., you don't have the possibility to grow, because you have some essential amino acid limiting. So the change of formulating the diets is different. Because in the past, you decide the level of protein and then the level of lysine, and depending on the lysine, the rest of synthetic amino acids were added. But nowadays, you have to define the level of protein that you would like to work with, that it depends on the level of security that you would like to have in your feeds. So the higher the problems, the lower the protein, and the opposite. And once you have the level of protein that you like to work with, then you have to see what are the maximum level of the essential amino acids that you don't have the synthetic version you have with this level of protein and with the raw materials that you have. And these levels of these amino acids that are essential but you don't have the synthetic ones define the level of lysine. And then the level of lysine, the level of methionine, threonine, and tryptophan. What is the problem? That the companies don't want to decrease the level of lysine because for the farmers is something very important. You know that the level of lysine is very high. And this makes some commercial problems, and some diets are very low in protein and very high in lysine, which is something that is contradictory. But it's done because the commercial problems or for decreasing too much the level of lysine. However, once we pass the first year after the zinc oxide ban, the companies are more confident in what are they doing, and this tendency in decreasing too much the level of proteins has stopped, and now we are starting to increase slightly again the level of proteins to see how much we can add without the problems of having too much protein in the diets. Also, the quality of protein is very important, and to have enough digestibility is something very important. So it's not only the level, but also the digestibility of the protein.
So if you get that ratio wrong or it's not right, what do you see in the pigs? Is it just a growth impact, or do you see diarrhea? Do you see behavioral changes? What do you see in the pigs if it's not right?
Well, if you are using low levels of protein or low levels of lysine, what you see is the animals are more healthy, but the performance is lower. So the growth is lower. But if you are using high level of lysine, methionine, threonine, and tryptophan without high levels of protein, then the animal have to metabolize all these amino acids, and they have to create more ammonia in the metabolism, because they have to they can accumulate these amino acids if you have the need of other essential amino acids for creating the proteins. So all these excess of amino acids are metabolized. So we have seen the two most important ones, that was the energy and the protein. And the third aspect that has been changed is the fiber. The fiber level was an anti-nutritional factor mainly several years ago, but more and more knowledge and scientific trials has demonstrated that some fiber is necessary for the piglets, for the physiology and the morphology of the gastrointestinal tract. The level of the fiber has increased very much in the last 7 years. These sources of fiber can be from different raw materials. For example, with oats, that it was a raw material that was unbelievable 5 or 6 years ago, and now is something that you can use. Some byproducts, for example, wet bran, also is something that is a raw material that can be used. And the third alternative are the concentrates of lignocellulose. This is the main sources of fiber. There are still discussions about it, but in general, it's accepted that in the just after weaning, the most important thing is giving as much as possible insoluble fiber with small quantities of soluble fiber, and only when the animals reach 12 kilograms or something like that, introducing higher levels of fermentable fiber. And this is something that we learn with experience, because in theory, should be something in the opposite, no? Because if you want to promote the fermentation and the fermentation for creating butyric acid or acetic acid in this colon, especially after weaning, it's better to have these soluble sources that are more fermentable. But the practice indicates that it's much better to use insoluble fiber, especially in the first 2, 3, 4 weeks after weaning, and then mix the insoluble and soluble fibers in the diets. The next nutrient that I would like to speak about is the calcium, which is also very, very important. Several studies have demonstrated that we were overfeeding calcium. And probably in the States, still you are using this this practice of overfeeding the calcium, because we use something like between 0.9-1% of calcium. And now we are formulating diet with 0.665. We are in the process of learning to how to formulate the diets with digestible calcium. And in this sense, we are following very much the works that has been that are doing in the States with Roselina Angel in the University of Maryland. The process is in the middle. No, we still don't have the ability to formulate with digestible calcium, but we will. But what is clear is that we should not use a high level of calcium. With these levels are more than enough. And also an important point to take into account is the acid binding capacity for of the diet, in order to give enough capacity to the stomach to work with a low pH. So we have to decrease the ABC, and if possible, we should use some products in order to help the animal to maintain this pH low. And after, we will see some of the strategies that we can use through different additives. And finally, regarding the nutrients, probably the last thing that we have changed is the level of sodium. Nowadays, we are using much more sodium than in the past. Levels above 0.3% are typical in the diets. So this is the biggest difference that we have done regarding the nutrients in the diets that we are formulating, comparing with the past, before the ban of the thinkosate and the lower use of antibiotics.
Great. Thank you for that. That really helps to understand. And I know those are big concepts, right? 7 years worth of study and trial and error to get
this
there.
This is a part that has been done by a lot of companies, and why not use this knowledge? No? And finally, of course, the last part of the nutrition, this is, let's say, the nutritional concepts. And finally, we can use the technology of the additives. The additives are technologies that... of course, we can apply, but we have to consider that the use of these additives is above all the things that we have done. So first, we have to design properly the diet, and then use the antibiotics, the additives. We cannot try to solve all the things with the additives without doing all the things that we should do regarding the diet, the components, the nutrients, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, no, great. So instead of the nutrition path, let's talk a little bit about like the management and facility changes. And again, you know, general concepts that you've seen producers do in the field to help alleviate the differences in use of antibiotics. So what about management or facility changes?
Probably the biggest change, especially in the south of Europe, has been the weaning age, because like I told you in Spain, we had a production similar to the US, and we used to wean very early, between 18 and 21 days. But this, in parallel with the changes in the genetics of the animals, that much more prolific sows are now used. This means that without antibiotics and without zinc oxide, it's very difficult to wean the animals with 18 and 21 days. We have to delay this decision till 25, 26, and probably in the coming years we will go to 28, 29 days, because the prolificity still is growing. The animals are born with a very low weight, and they need more time in order to reach a normal weight to be weaned. Let's say at least 6.5 kilograms. So the tendency will be to increase this weaning age, at least to my opinion. No? And of course, also there has been a lot of changes regarding the facilities, regarding the space, the heating system, the ventilation systems in general. All has been improved, because otherwise we don't have the possibility of use the level of antibiotics that we use in the past. So, or we change the facilities and change the management and change the feed, or we are not able to do the same that we did in the past. The worst farms probably has been eliminated of the market, and the new ones has much more all the technology available in this moment, and therefore the tendency is to improve clearly the facilities and also the management of the farms. Probably the biggest problem that we have, especially in the south of Europe, is the personnel and the personal education that works in the farm, because this is a big challenge for the producer nowadays.
So finding employees that want to work in agriculture or trained employees that have experience?
Both. In agriculture in general, but especially in the pig farms. Much more difficult, let's say, personnel with the experience and the knowledge of working in a farm, which is something that is not easy if you want to do the things well.
Yeah, I think that's a universal problem that we have in swine production. Yeah, absolutely. So what about changes in the health of the pigs, going through the farms? Has there been initiatives to, improve health in terms of, PRRS virus or influenza or that area?
Well, I think the health plans have improved, especially the vaccine plans, in order to, let's say, avoid as much as possible the problems. But sometimes when you have, for example, PRRS problems, in Spain in the last 2 years, we have had a very huge problem with a PRRS strain that increased the mortality dramatically, and we have to deal as we could, but the mortality increased very much in the last year and the last summer. Nowadays we are better, but we don't know what will be in the future. So generally speaking, the sector try to do as best as possible, but not always we succeed. And regarding the diarrhea, I think the impact of decreasing the antibiotics is much lower than we expected. For example, in Spain, let's say 3 or 4 years ago, it was very popular to use colistin in the after weaning diets. But the authorities say that we can not use colistin in the same way that we used to use it, and the use have to be very, very limited. And the sector was that it can be something that can be dramatic, but finally we decreased 99% the use of colistin. At that point we still have the zinc oxide, but now we don't have the zinc oxide, and the difference, we have some more mortality and less productivity than in the past, but it has not been a disaster like many companies thought that it was producing without colistin, for example. So it can be done.
So what's it look like going forward? Are there more restrictions coming? Are there going to be more products banned?
You are asking me very nice
questions. Your thoughts.
Moving forward, I think we should go in the same, let's say, in the same direction. So we have to improve the health programs, the management, the facilities. We should work more and more in the nutrition, either in the nutrients, like with all the things that we have seen in the previous question, regarding the quality of the raw materials, and also using the technology that the additives offer us in order to give a step forward that we can do with the nutrients and the raw materials quality. So we have to do all the things in a way of interacting all the things together. So in an holistic way, let's say.
So Dr. Medel, I'm interested to hear a success story with a product or something you've done recently that you know was a success, either a product that you've worked in with Innovabiotics or that you've seen with a close customer or production system. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we work in several fields, but I will explain one of the things that we developed. We started to work with different medium chain fatty acid monoglycerides. And as you know, there are several, from C3, C4, C8, C10, C12. We started to work with them, let's say, in an individual way. But then we tried to look for the different synergies that we can apply with the different ones, because each one has completely different actions in the gut health and in the metabolism. We try to look for these synergies that can be applied with the different lengths of the fatty acid in the monoester. No, we developed several lines trying to cover in several problems: diarrhea, or Streptococcus suis, or a source of butyric acid, for example. And then once we try to find the synergism between the different monoglycerides, also we try to look synergisms with other families of compounds. For example, mixing this with organic acids, or mixing these compounds with essential oils, different essential oils, in order to try to make more complex products that cover different products in different, trying to solve different problems, no? And this takes several steps, and we put in the market several products in this sense. And this is one of the samples that I can show you.
Yeah, great. Well, I think it's a, like you mentioned before, you know, you have to get the diets right and the timing right. And then you get to the micronutrients at the end. And there's so many different combinations that takes a while to, and different challenges that a farm has compared to another farm. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Great. Well, we're concluding our time together, Pedro, but before we sign off, do you have any final thoughts or something that we didn't cover that you want to share with the group?
Well, the message that I would like to invite is that, I don't know, and it's not let's say that the different countries can do whatever they want regarding the politics of antibiotics. They can ban, they can try to decrease, they can do whatever they want. I think that the antibiotics are completely necessary for animal production. The ill animals need to be treated, and I'm completely a favor of the correct use of antibiotics, of course. However, I think the use of these antibiotics can be rationalized a little bit. And the message that I would like to send to the countries or the companies that would like to do that is that it can be done. It takes time, it takes a lot of effort, but it can be done. You don't have to be afraid to this step in order to decrease the use of antibiotics. And you can produce pigs without antibiotics, with a more rational use of antibiotics and without pharmacological level of zinc oxide. It's possible, and it's a question of doing the things properly. And under an holistic point of view, covering management, facilities, and nutrition.
Exactly. It's going to take more than just take the antibiotics out and hope for the best, right? It's a methodical process.
Yeah.
I've seen it done, unfortunately, and it is a problem. So, great.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. FeedFlow. Feed is too expensive to ignore. Take control with FeedFlow. Sunai. We provide value-added biotech solutions. Healthy Farms by Bioverse, your manure management experts. AccuFast. The best way to predict the future is to create it. Start creating your future today at AccuFastSwine.com. FeedFlow is changing the way the swine industry sees feed. As the world's only on-pipe feed sensor, FeedFlow tells you exactly how much feed is being delivered to your animals, so you can be sure that every pig in your barn is well-fed and growing. With industry-leading precision and up-to-the-minute real-time data and alerts, FeedFlow is a simple and affordable way to improve production outcomes across your organization. Feed is too expensive to ignore. Try FeedFlow today.
So with all of our guests, we have a few questions at the end of our podcast that allow us to get to know you just a little bit better. And so one of those is, what's your favorite book or resource in your area of expertise? What's your go-to?
To be honest, the books that I appreciate more is a Spanish source. And it's called FEDNA. It's an organization in Spain that works for animal nutrition in the animal nutrition area. Every year there is a congress, and the proceedings of this congress are very useful, especially because we try to. I'm part of the board of FEDNA. We try to invite the best researchers worldwide in different aspects in nutrition. A lot of American professors are coming every year to the FEDNA Congress, and the proceedings of this Congress are very. It's a manual that I used to use very frequently. So this is the sources, and of course there are much more that you can always have in your hand, like NRC or INRA or CBB, etc. But the one that I use more is the FEDNA tables and the FEDNA proceedings.
Right, and that's right up to date, right? Those types of proceedings. I also go to in the swine health area, and so it's the most up to date. Compared to, books are usually conceptual. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So how about your favorite book or resource outside your area of expertise?
Difficult to say, but I may choose, for example, Las Máscaras del Héroe. It's a Spanish book. Juan Manuel de Prada is the writer, but it's a Spanish book.
Okay, great. And one last question. So share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets a person apart from others.
I like very much working with the people who knows how to work in team, because finally it's like when you are trying to combine different additives that when you combine different products and different mode of actions, the results is always better than the pure ones. Each one can have some attributes that can be better or worse, but when you the final work, what you can see is the work of the team. And for that, it's important that each one individually has good qualities. But if it's not possible to work in teams, this is not worthy. So the most important thing is that a group of people can work in team, because the result is better than the sum of the individual work of each one.
Oh, absolutely. And I love your analogy of thinking it through a diet that has a lot of components and has to have a teamwork approach to people. So absolutely, that's That's a great attribute. So if you have, we're going to round out our time together. If you have questions for Dr. Medel, comments on our show, or you want to send us a like, do those on your podcast platform. Thank you so much for your time today. This is again, Dr. Pedro Medel, and I appreciate it.
Thank you to you too much. It was nice to participate. And you have seen a very nice person to speak with.
Great. Thank you.
Looking to elevate your brand and captivate audiences through the power of podcasting? Look no further. Introducing the custom podcast brought to you by Wisemetics, where we take care of the behind the scenes so that you can focus on what truly matters. Podcasting has become an invaluable tool for brand awareness, but let's face it, putting it into practice can be a daunting task. It's incredibly time consuming and requires technical know-how. But don't worry, we've got you covered. With our experienced team at the helm, we'll handle the operational aspects so you can channel your energy into what your company does best. Are you ready to unleash the podcasting potential of your company? Schedule a call with one of our specialists today at the link in the bottom of this episode. You'll also receive a free podcast strategy consult tailored to the unique needs and goals of your business.